The Song of Solomon. Now, that's not actually its title. If we look at verse 1, you'll see the title. It's the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Now, in Jewish constructions or emphasis, we have some examples. King of Kings. What does that mean? It's the greatest king. Or, as we just read in Ecclesiastes, vanity of vanities. It's the greatest vanity. So here we have the Song of Songs. In Solomon's opinion, this is it. This is the big song. Now, he wrote over 1,000 songs. We know of about 1,005 that he wrote. And so if this is the one to him that's the Song of Songs, the wisest man in the world, this has to be something impressive. Now, what does this book mean? As you read it, it's a love story. And some believe it's just an erotic love song. To the Jews, it's a spiritual allegory. And they see Israel as the bride, and then Solomon, the beloved, would be God. And it's that relationship. It's an allegory between God and his people. And we even could use that as Christians. The same thing, because we're God's people. I don't know if that's right or not as an allegory. I tend to not spiritualize things unless God tells us to. So I look at the Song of Solomon really as just a woman that Solomon was madly in love with. And if we flip back into Ecclesiastes, just a few pages back, let's see here, where'd I put it? I'm just a page back. I'm in chapter 9, verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. I believe this is that woman he's talking about. He's thinking personally, live joyfully with the wife that you love. And then back in Proverbs, well, but the last proverb, Proverb 31. He talks about a godly woman that God has given you. This could be her that he's writing about. Now, one more thing before we take a look at the book. My mother, who, as many of you know, collected books, rare books, some of them as old as the 1500s, and she passed away, and so I inherited a very special one, and it is the Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs. This is more than a couple hundred years old, and it's made out of wood. Even the pages are made out of wood. And when we were looking through some of her books, Nadine and Elizabeth saw this and just loved it. Now, this is very special because, young ladies, when you reached age, this would be a gift to you from a Jewish family. If you're a young Jewish girl, you have this book given to you. But as you can see on the sides, it's sealed because it's just so erotic that you couldn't read it until you're of age. And it's the book of Song of Solomon. And all the pages are made of wood. They're hand done. And so when you were of age, this book was so racy, they'd give it to you and you could cut the ribbons and actually open it and read it. Ooh. And this one has been cut, so somebody. So I'll set this over here. It's very old. Please be really careful if you want to look at it. And I even brought some gloves you can put on. Because it's probably from the 1700s. So, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. And by the way, this, I think, would be like an opera. And so you'd have, as we start off, it says the Shulamite. And this is a girl from, possibly from the town of Shunem, which is a village north of the Jezreel Valley. Jezreel Valley is, my battery's dead. Jezreel Valley is where the Battle of Armageddon is going to be fought. So just north of that, you have Nazareth up there and this little village of Shunem, perhaps. So she is an Israelite. And so she would be probably the soprano, like Angela, and as she sings this song. And then we'd have the beloved coming in. If you look at verse 8, there's a beloved coming in. He'd be the deep baritone voice as we're singing this opera. And then we have the daughters of Jerusalem. And they would be the chorus, You know, so you have the girl singing, and then you have the handsome man singing, and then here comes the chorus with emphasis on what they've just talked about. So keep that in mind as we go. I promise not to sing all these parts because I don't harmonize like a bird. You want me to? Okay. No. Okay. So we start off. Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. In other words, smother me with kisses. For your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore the virgins love you. Draw me away. And then we have the daughters of Jerusalem, the chorus. We will run after you. See, you don't want me to do that all morning. The king has brought me into his chambers. Oh, we will be glad and rejoice in you. The daughters are supportive. Oh, we're happy for you. We will remember your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. And then the Shulamite, the girl. I am dark, but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. Now, in those days, if you're tanned, that wasn't really cool. The white skin meant that you were upper class and you weren't out in the sun working like a laborer. She's saying, I'm really from low status. I'm tanned. I've been out in the vineyard. So don't look down upon me because I'm dark. The sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards. Now she often will describe herself as a vineyard as well as we go through the book of Solomon, and you'll see here. But my own vineyard I have not kept. I've been out working in the vineyard, and I haven't really been able to take care of myself, and I'm all tan. So don't despise me for that. And then she's talking to Solomon. Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon, for why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? Then Solomon in the deep voice, if you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents. I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. Guys, if you really want to win your girl over, I've compared you to the filly, the long little horse, of my Pharaoh's chariot. You know, at the rodeo last night, we could do that. Hey, this is my cute little filly, you know. It would work. Didn't sound like it worked. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold. And then the daughters, the chorus comes back in. We will make you ornaments of gold with studs of silver. We're going to make you even more beautiful for your heartthrob. And then she sings, while the king is at his table, my spikenard sends forth its fragrance. This is perfume. My perfume bottle. My perfume sends forth its fragrance. A bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me. Now, myrrh was a gum resin, and they'd make perfume, and they'd make incense and medicine from it. And at times, when there's a shortage of myrrh, it actually was more valuable than gold. So she's saying, he's perfume to me, and he's myrrh to me that lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blooms. Now, this one confuses me because this was a plant they'd use to dye hair and they'd make temporary tattoos with. The flowers are really kind of small. I don't know if they're that fragrant, but so he's like a cluster of henna blooms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. And then Solomon, behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes. And then she responds, behold, you are handsome, my beloved. Yes, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. The beams of our houses are cedar and our rafters of fir. The idea is here, their bed is outside. They'd sleep outside under the trees. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Now, Sharon, the word means a plain. And so the rose of Sharon, really, if you translate it literally, it'd be a small flower. So she's saying, I'm just a small flower in the big flat valley. And when those valleys would bloom like they are around here, you'd have tons of flowers. So she's saying, I'm just one of those little flowers. Like, why am I so special to you, Solomon? I'm just a flower of Sharon, or flower of the valley, and a lily of the valleys. And then he responds, like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. You're not just a little flower. All those are thorns compared to you. And so she responds to him, like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house. Or that could also be translated to the wine garden. You notice up in verse 3, she's talking about tasting his fruit, it's sweet. She's talking about wine. He brought me to the wine garden, and his banner over me was love. Now, the banner could be shade, covering. He just covered me in love. Sustained me with cakes of raisins. Refreshed me with apples, for I am lovesick. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field. So this is like an oath. I don't know why she's doing it by the gazelles and the does. We might say by, what would we say, you guys? I charge you by, we don't do that. I don't know. I can't think of anything. No one has one? Come on. By my mother's grave. There you go. I charge you by my motorcycle. It's less romantic. By the gazelles or the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. In other words, don't interrupt us. That's the first poem. Now we go to the second poem. The voice of my beloved. Behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice. In other words, he's coming. He's coming and he's looking for me. My beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come. And the voice of the turtle doves is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes. Give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock. In other words, he can't see her. She's in the clefts of the rock. In the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. So he's saying, come away with me. Now, you could stretch this and say, it's a pickup line. It's a pretty good pickup line. What do you think, gals? But he's saying, come away with me. She's saying, he's coming, oh boy. He's saying, come away with me. And then we have her brothers speaking. I'm not sure what catch the foxes means in 15 and 16, so I'm going to let you guys read that and go on into verse 17. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle, or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether. By night on my bed, I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. I will rise now, I said, and go about the city. So she's looking for him. In the streets and in the squares, I will seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. The watchmen who go about the city found me. I said, have you seen the one I love? Scarcely had I passed by them when I found the one I love. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field. We have the same thing here, don't we? Do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. That's the end of the second poem. In the third act, starting at verse 6, we have the coming of Solomon, and I believe we have a marriage. So if we have a marriage here, I'm not sure what order all of these acts go. And they may not be in chronological order. He may just be talking about these events of their heart as they meet and they're infatuated and they love each other. Oh, they get married here, and oh, they're together here. So let's take a look at the arrival of Solomon, verse 6. Who is this coming out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the merchant's fragrant powders? Behold, it is Solomon's couch, with 60 valiant men around it. Of the valiant of Israel, they all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has a sword on his thigh because of fear in the night. So here's his caravan, and there's warriors and strength, and he's just, and the fragrance, and he's awesome. Verse 9, of the wood of Lebanon, Solomon the king made himself a palanquin. And I thought, I don't use that word often. So I looked it up. And it's a portable enclosed chair or bed. So he made himself this portable couch. It's all enclosed. He made its pillars of silver, its support of gold, its seat of purple, its interior paved with love by the daughters of Jerusalem. And the thing is that it's decorated inside, either by the daughters of Jerusalem or with pictures of all these gorgeous women from Jerusalem. Verse 11, go forth, O daughters of Zion, and see King Solomon with the crown, or behold him, how majestic and handsome he is, with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, the day of the gladness of his heart. And then Solomon speaks, behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes behind your veil. Now this really gets racy because he's just going to talk about her beauty. And guys, pay attention because you might want to use some of these. For example, your hair is like a flock of goats going down from Mount Gilead. Now, back in those days, the goats would be black. And so I guess as the goats are coming down and they're kind of, you see the flock moving and it's flowing, and her hair could be moving and flowing. It's beautiful black flowing hair. But we move on. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep, which have come up from the washing. I can see that. They're white. Okay, he's trying to be romantic. And then he gets more specific. Every one of which bears twins, and none is barren among them. That means you don't have any missing teeth. There's no gaps there. They're white teeth, and you got them all. You're just gorgeous. Your lips are like a strand of scarlet, and your mouth is lovely. Your temples or cheeks behind your veil are like a piece of pomegranate. Well, the pomegranates are round and they're kind of reddened. I can see that. You know, he's trying. He's trying to be romantic here. Your neck is like the Tower of David. You're kind of losing it, Solomon. Built for an armory on which hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. I think what he's saying is you've got a nice, tall, slender neck and you can hang necklaces on it. It's beautiful. And verse 5, we'll just kind of run right on through. Awesome. Verse 6, until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, I will go my way to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. You are all fair, my love, and there is no spot in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse. With me from Lebanon, look from the top of Amana, from the top of Sinir. That's another word for Mount Hermon. And Hermon. From the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. The thought here is that, you know, come away with me. You're up there on the mountains. You're sort of inaccessible to me. Please come away with me. Verse 9. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Now, she's not really his sister. This is a term of affection that was normal in those days. They're not related. In fact, they're not even married yet. He's calling her spouse. She could be like the betrothed. So it's a term of endearment. My sister, my spouse, you have ravished my heart with one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love, and the scent of your perfumes than all spices. Your lips, O my spouse, drip as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Your plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, fragrant henna with spikenard, spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices, a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters and streams from Lebanon. What he's saying here is, we're not married yet. You're a virgin. You're gorgeous. You're just nothing but spices and beauty. And then she responds, and this is in that brown book, by the way. Awake, O north wind, and come, O south. Blow upon my garden, that its spices may flow out, that my beloved come to his garden and eat its pleasant fruits. So she's offering herself to him, inviting him to her. He responds, I have come to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. And then we have his friends, eat O friends, drink, yes, drink deeply, O beloved ones. And that's the end of the third act. Now, in the fourth act here, verse 2 through, let's see here, 2 through chapter 6, verse 3, we have the Shulamite girl, she has a dream. And we don't know if it's a dream or reality, but he's knocking at the door. And she's saying, you know, I'm already to bed. He's saying, let me in. Well, I'm already in bed. And how can I get up and let you in? I'm going to let you guys read this. There's a cry for help where she talks to the keepers of the walls and they take her veil away. And the thinking is they probably thought she was a harlot or a prostitute out because she's out there at night. She's got her veil and they give her trouble. They wound her by saying, what are you doing out here? And they take her veil off to see who she is and so forth. In verse 9, though, when she's asking for the daughters of Jerusalem to help her, the choir, she says, tell me where he is. I'm lovesick. In verse 8 and verse 9, well, what is your beloved more than another beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved that you so charge us? And so verses 10 through 16, we have her answer. So this is for the girls to remember when you want to kind of really build up your guy. My beloved is white and ruddy, chief among 10,000. His head is like the finest gold. His locks are wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are like a bed of spices, banks of scented herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. His hands are rods of gold, set with beryl. His body is carved ivory. Okay, I'd go for that one. What do you think, Kevin? Yeah. Julia tells you your body's like carved ivory. It's kind of cool. I could do that. I'm not sure about, you know, liquid myrrh and lilies and stuff, but carved ivory I could go for. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of fine gold. His countenance is like Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So in chapter 6, they have a second question. Well, where is he gone that we can help you go look for him? And in verses 2 and 3, she says he's gone to a garden and I'm not sure where that would be. In verse 4, we have the fifth poem. This is verse 4 through chapter 8, 4. Oh, my love, you are as beautiful as Tirzah, and this was a capital city in northern Israel. Lovely as Jerusalem, awesome as an army with banners. So she has a regal beauty. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have overcome me. Your hair is like a flock of goats going down from Gilead. Your teeth, so we have the same thing here, the flock of goats and the teeth. And he's saying, you just mesmerized me. Don't look at me, because you just do something to me. Verse 8. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. My dove, my perfect one, is the only one. The only one after her, the only one of her mother, the favorite of the one who bore her. The daughters saw her and called her blessed. And the queens and the concubines, they praised her. So I heard an awe out there. I mean, that's pretty sweet. Now, if we allegorize this and we're talking about God towards us, that's really cool. Is that how God feels towards us? We're one of a thousand, each one of us. He came and died for us. If it's a love story, it's a great section. Verse 10. Who is she who looks forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, awesome as an army with banners? And then she speaks, I went down to the garden of nuts to see the verdure of the valley. Verdure is a lush, flourishing vegetation. So I went down to the garden of nuts to see the lush, flourishing vegetation of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded and the pomegranate had bloomed. Before I was even aware, my soul had made me as the chariots of my noble people, In other words, I'm just the chariots of the noble people are coming, and you just get excited. Wow. Perhaps how we felt last night watching the fireworks with the music and for our nation. Just, oh. Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon you. This is Solomon and his friends. Come on back. And the woman, well, what would you see in the Shulamite? As it were, the dance of the two camps. She's saying, why do you want me to come and gaze upon me? What's so special about me? And this dance of the two camps, we're thinking this was probably a traditional dance of the time. Maybe they're saying, come, and you know, I'll come and I'll do this traditional dance, but why? Why are you so excited about me? Well, how beautiful are your feet in sandals? She's dancing there. You see the feet in the sandals. Oh, prince's daughter, the curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a skillful workman. Your navel is a rounded goblet. Don't think that, is that going to work in today's? It lacks no blended beverage. I'm just not there. I'm trying to get into this in his mind, but I don't quite get that one. Your waist is a heap of wheat. That could be good or bad. Set about with lilies. Your other parts there are like fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes like the pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bathrabim. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. There's another one I'm not sure about, which looks toward Damascus. Your head crowns you like Mount Carmel, and the hair of your head is like purple. A king is held captive by your tresses. Well, that's why he wants you to come and dance before them. You're gorgeous. How fair and how pleasant you are, O love, with your delights. The stature of yours is like a palm tree, and your breast like its clusters. I said, I will go to the palm tree. I will take hold of its branches. Let now your breasts be like clusters of the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and the roof of your mouth like the best wine. And then she speaks about the wine. The wine goes down smoothly for my beloved, moving gently the lips of sleepers. I am my beloved's and his desire toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth to the field. Let us lodge in the villages. And really, instead of villages, literally this would be the henna bush. So she's saying, let us go out to the fields. You know, our house was, or our bed was under the trees. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine is budded, whether the grape blossoms are open and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give off a fragrance, and at our gates are pleasant fruits, all manner new and old, which I have laid up for you, my beloved. Now, she mentions mandrakes here. Can you think of another time in Scripture when mandrakes are mentioned? Is anybody? Yes. Yeah. It was Reuben that found some mandrakes, and he brought them to his mom, Leah, and they were thought to be an aphrodisiac, and they were thought to help with fertility. And so, Rachel came and said, let me have some of your mandrakes. And she said, what? You're gonna take my mandrakes? You've already taken my husband and you want mandrakes too? And she said, okay, I'll let you. You can have him tonight. Have your husband tonight. And if you give me some of the mandrakes. Well, they did the deal and Leah conceived. But then we see just a few lines later in Scripture that Rachel conceived. Remember, she had trouble having children. She got the mandrakes and she conceived. So they really thought that mandrakes were cool. And so here we have in verse 13, the mandrakes are ready. They give off their fragrance. And then verse 8, it's kind of interesting. Oh, that you were like my brother who nursed at my mother's breast. If I should find you outside, I would kiss you. I would not be despised. I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother, she who used to instruct me. I would cause you to drink of spiced wine of the juice of my pomegranate. I believe what she's saying here is, oh, that our relationship could just be out in the open. Oh, that you were like my brother, because if I ran across you like my brother out in the road, I could kiss you and everybody watching wouldn't think a thing of it. Well, if you were my beloved and this relationship was just fine and, you know, according to our culture, then I could kiss you out in the open and it'd be no big deal. She's wanting a legitimacy in the relationship. And so we finish up this poem with, his left hand is under my head and his right hand embraces me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. Then we have the sixth and the last poem. And we have a relative speaking now. Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? Well, remember earlier in chapter 8, we have, oh, that this relationship could be just accepted by everyone. And now we have a relative noticing them. Well, who is it? They're walking up together, leaning on each other. What's going on? I awakened you under the apple tree. There your mother brought you forth. There she who bore you brought you forth. We're not sure if this is addressed to the girl or to the man. We're not sure what it means. Did someone really? It's saying you were conceived and you were born under this tree. Is that true? Was one of them conceived and born under the tree? We're not quite sure. It's a difficult one to translate. Then we have the Shulamite speaking to her beloved. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is as strong as death, jealousy as cruel as the grave. Its flames are flames of fire, a most vehement flame. I'm noticing as we go through chapter 8, we have, oh, that this could be accepted by society, and then the next one is society's discovering them, and then we have, set me as a seal, even on your arm. Let me just be solidly attached to you, and all of society sees it and understands that we're together. Verse 7, many waters cannot quench love, nor can the floods drown it. If a man would give for love all the wealth of his house, it would be utterly despised. Saying the wealth would be despised compared to love. And then verses 8 and 9, 10 and 11, the brothers are saying, well, our sister, she's not quite mature enough really to be married. So what we'll do is we'll decorate her. We'll put jewelry on her and make her really look more appealing. And then in verse 10, their sister answers, or the Shulamite woman answers and says, no, I'm developed. I'm ready. I'm ready for this love. And then in verse 11, she says, Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Haman. That means wealthy lord. So Solomon had a vineyard at wealthy lord. In other words, the wealthy lord has a vineyard. He leased the vineyards to keepers. Everyone was to bring for its fruit 1,000 silver coins. My own vineyard, and she's talking about herself, is before me. You, O Solomon, may have 1,000. You can have all the fruit from my vineyard. I give it to you. And those who tend its fruit, 200. Now, this was a typical payment for a worker in a vineyard. So she's saying, you know, the workers have to tend it, but I give all of its bounty, all of its profit, all of its everything to you, Solomon. I give myself to you. And then he answers, you who dwell in the gardens, the companions listen for your voice, or my companions listen for you. Let me hear it. My companions are watching for you because I know that they know that I love you. Let me just hear your voice. And then she answers, make haste, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. Make haste, come to me. Come quickly. That's the end of the Song of Solomon. What application are we going to take from this? Why is this book here? It is pretty racy. What can we learn from this? Did you know that God created marriage and love? We have this argument in our nation about who should be married. God created it. He brought Eve to Adam. Adam didn't even know he had the need. And God showed him that he had the need, and he brought Eve. For what reason? It's not good that man should be alone. God wants us to have this romance, this love, this oneness. He wants us to have right on relationships. We see as we read this book that the woman is, here I am, I'm all yours, take me and enjoy. And the man is saying, you're 1 in 1,000, all my focus is on you, and just a great relationship. God wants us to have that kind of stuff. In some religions, it's, you know what, you never become intimate unless you're going to have kids. For that reason, that's not what God teaches. God made all this for us to enjoy. We're to enjoy each other. And Solomon echoes that in Ecclesiastes 9 that we read, 9:9, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your life. There's another application that we could possibly dwell on and teach a whole Sunday sermon on. And that is, if this is allegorized, what does God think of us? How does God love you? How does he love me? This deeply, this is pretty passionate. God's passionate about us. Are we passionate about God? We've got two sides here, and they're both passionate. We need to be passionate about God. When we wake up in the morning, what do we think about? What do I have scheduled today? What am I going to do today? What's the plan? Are we going to barbecue? Are we going to go for a motorcycle ride? What are we going to... You know, we should be waking up with a passion for the Lord. I could do a more sermon here. I don't want to do a more sermon with you because we can always love God more. We can always have more passion. But he should be that center of our life, shouldn't he? The joy of the Lord is my strength. We don't have that joy unless we're passionate about the Lord and understand his passion for us. Those are all truths. So here we have a book of passion. I think it's to teach us about our relationship with the Lord. We can look at these two people with passion for each other and understand our relationship with God needs to be that. Or we can look at it as an allegory and realize directly God has that passion for us. Those are my thoughts for application for the Song of Solomon. So we'll finish that and we'll do 1 John next week.